Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And welcome in to another episode of Turn the Corner, a Detroit Tigers podcast. I am Kieran Stegley. With me, as always, a man who makes Chi-Town just a little bit more outgoing. He is Cody Stavenhagen. How you doing?
Doing well, Kieran. Last night here in Chicago, last night with this city backdrop, it's been a good time. We're on to New York, and then we'll finally be home by the end of the week.
All right, well, the most important question is your hotel in New York. Like, is it going to have as equally beautiful a backdrop? Because I think we're spoiled here. I don't know.
Yeah, probably not. I'm staying on the Lower East Side, which I've never done before. All the hotels I normally stay at in New York were, you know, either all booked up or crazy prices. So staying somewhere new, I'm going to assume it probably won't have the best of views. But hey, we'll see.
Well, no. Here's the thing. It'll have the best of views. Because when we do this podcast and we put videos out there, you'll be in it, so it'll be okay. It'll be the best of views. And the best of baseball this week, well, the Tigers got themselves an opening weekend sweep. And I, you know, juggling family, Easter stuff or whatever, come back to this podcast. I told my wife, I was like, you know, I kind of hope they win by one today. Because I just wanted to have the sequence of a sweep with a three-run differential going into New York. I just thought that was perfect. And to be honest, Cody, I actually do think this was a, like, is it kind of weird to say, and maybe is it redundant based on how I viewed, like, opening day? But it kind of felt like the perfect sweep. What I mean by that is that you won, you know, you had a one-run win on opening day. Then you had the claw back in a high-scoring game with game two. And kind of in the middle was game three. And you had to rely on different guys and different key spots. Lord knows AJ worked the hell out of those lineups, which you've talked about here on this and on our YouTube page, Turn the Corner podcast. And you got contributions from basically everybody you wanted to get contributions from in whatever fashion. You know, Torg with an RBI, Meadows, you know, sealing, you know, saving a run, you know, in center field. Green got a home run. Like, there are all these kind of checkpoints you want, like, that you think, oh, it'd be great if we could get X in three games. We might not be able to, but it'd be great if we could get X. It'd be great if we could get it. Most all of them hit, Cody, and then I would say things that we were nervous about, more or less, were also verified on the other end of the spectrum. So your interpretation of the Tigers taking three games in Chicago, which we're not going to discount because given this teams of the past couple years, starts in April, we're not going to dismiss a three-game sweep. But, like, it just happened. It was almost as if it was written, like, the script. It was the script this weekend.
Well, it was. It was three great baseball games, so I think you have to enjoy that first.
I like
and
that,
foremost.
Yeah.
You could argue any sweep is a perfect sweep because, hey, you're 3-0. There are a lot of little things that went on that we can discuss. There were a lot of good things. There were some not-so-good things, too. Ken Maeda's start, Alex Lane's outing. Saw a little bit of the good Javi in game one and then more of the bad Javi by game three. But overall, you know, I like you said, I don't think you can discount this because it's three wins. It's three wins on the board and in the standings. The cynical view is, well, they're playing the White Sox, and they only won each game by one run. Like, is this team even good? I don't know. but I know that you feel better leaving Chi-Town with 3 wins than you do 0, 1, or 2 wins. That's really, I think, just how I've come to look at it. That, and, you know, it did. We saw the Tigers, I think, play their ideal style, and we talked about this after opening day, but a lot of mixing and matching, a lot of playing good defense, doing some little things well. AJ Hinch leaving a huge imprint on the game. We saw that in the ninth. He managed circles around Pedro Grifol. It was kind of incredible. I'm still a little dumbstruck at just some of the moves Grifol didn't make in terms of utilizing his left-handed relievers. It all played right into AJ and the Tigers' hands, and then obviously the players executed. You know, I wrote that Andy Ibañez is such an X factor, like we saw the Andy Ibañez factor at its best. He kind of does encapsulate this Tigers team in terms of a waiver claim, who's a platoon-oriented guy who just goes about his business, and when he gets his opportunity, he comes through. That's exactly what happened Sunday in this sweep. I hope we get to see more baseball like that this season.
Well, we're basically talking about 2 games here, so we're going to have a lot of narrow scopes. That's sort of the point of this podcast. But in general, with how these 3 games went, I got to say, like, we worried about third base and the options available at third base. I say we, the fans, and then you as a media member just kind of pondering. Contributions from every single person, now whether they're actually playing third base or not in the case of Erling, but contributions from every single person in some fashion this 3-game sweep, which I don't want to go unmentioned, if that makes sense. Like, you mentioned Ibañez. He has, obviously, the game-winning hit. You know, Veerling, his versatility has already borne out where it's like, all right, he's starting opening day in right field, you know, and he does score the run there at the end because he is that kind of athlete that you can have on the bench and use. Now, he didn't need his athleticism per se, but he was available there. And Gio had a couple of base knocks today, finally, in his Tigers debut. And a really nice play at third base, by the way, fading over into foul territory, really making a throw. And I don't want to not mention McKinstry with the series saving, I guess you could say, or series clinching, whatever. Kind of an awkward hop, and then touched third base. And look, it wasn't a perfect throw, but it was good enough that Torkelson could make a fine scoop. You know, that is worth mentioning. The worries there, I'm not going to say they were unfounded. They were founded. But you saw the plan. And that's all I'm saying, is that, like, you saw the plan at third base. And then in terms of the bullpen, up until Chafin gave up that home run, This bullpen through 3 games was held the White Sox scoreless. And we'll get to Alex Lang here in a second. But overall, the strength of the bullpen, the options of the bullpen played itself out too. So again, that kind of plays into what I consider like a perfect series, because also AJ Hinch got to flex his muscle. Because guess what? If this team's going to do anything fun, and from above 500 on, AJ Hinch is going to have to flex his muscle, right? So that play, those are all those things that come back to AJ Hinch and Scott Harris and their plan, and AJ executing it to a T, Cody.
Yeah, I mean, let's dive into it a little bit. I think 2 things stood out to me in Sunday's game. One is the options you have in the bullpen. And Dan Dickerson talked about this a lot on the radio. And it's so, one thing the Tigers have that not every team does have is bullpens, a bullpen that can get out both righties and lefties. You have guys like Andrew Chafin, who, although he is better against left-handed hitters, he handles right-handed hitters really good. That made a difference on multiple occasions this weekend. Tyler Holton dominated against left-handed hitters, holds his own against right-handed hitters too. I was a little nervous when he had to face Luis Robert, who had a 950 OPS or something crazy against left-handers. Holton goes out there and gets him, you know. Compare that to the White Sox bullpen, where you have some guys, Tim Hill, one of their lefties, Banks, one of their lefties, a couple other righties, who have really wide splits. It limits you in how you can navigate these situations. And so, I talked about AJ Hinch's lineup in the Saturday game. I put that video out if you guys want to dive into it. It's really interesting. The key moment, strategic moment, Sunday comes in the ninth. Chicago, they've got a righty on the mound. Jake Rogers is up. AJ Hinch pinch hits Zach McKinstry. There's a left-hander warming in the bullpen. And in my head, I'm kind of like, would you really have McKinstry against knowing they're going to bring in a lefty rather than Jake instead of a righty? Now, I don't know this for a fact, and AJ was even asked after the game, and he said, you'll never know. But I think if the White Sox would have trotted in that left-hander, AJ just would have pulled McKinstry back, sent a right-hander up to the plate. So it was another kind of trap he had laid for Pedro Grifol. So Grifol does not bring in the lefty. The guy they hit on the mound, pretty neutral splits, but a little higher walk rate against left-handed batters, which is really interesting. Actually, a lot higher walk rate. What does he do? He walks McKinstry. Grifol, then, again, kind of puzzling, what are we doing here? Okay, now I'll bring in the lefty. So you know what AJ does? He brings in Abanez, who he probably would have brought in for McKinstry had they gone to the lefty the first time. And Abanez, you just kind of knew he was getting hit. Like, I just felt like, dude, this guy's going to get a hit off a left-hander. And sure enough, that's what happens. So it was lined up really well, and obviously Andy Abanez gets the props for executing.
So a lot of dudes will brag about their own athletic abilities that do podcasts and stuff. I'm a do the opposite. I'm gonna say I was not good enough to play varsity in high school in Texas, but I did do like stat keeping and all that stuff. I love baseball, and so I'm with the assistant coach who's calling pitches and all that stuff. And to give an idea of this guy, like his prowess, like he more or less discovered Bobby Witt these past couple years. Like I don't think
he needed much discovering, but
you know, like he coached him and all that stuff. Like, and he was a scout and all those things. So he's doing back and forth on the game and he's calling pitches and he gets this guy and the opposing coach in a situation that just makes him look like an idiot. And he goes, read more than one baseball book, bro. You know, that's how I think AJ Hinch is a lot of times. Like, and this is not anything direct at Pedro or anything like that. But I just think like the way he thinks the game, I think, is advanced more than the average manager and certainly below average managers. I'm not saying Pedro's that. I'm just saying in a general sense, that's how much I view AJ's like moves on the chessboard. Right. Let's keep the positive stuff, and then we'll kind of go to some drawbacks here. I think it might be fun, Cody, this season to do, like, power rankings 1 and 2
Ooh.
Of the catchers. Because,
Ooh.
I don't know,
what it's gonna
like,
be tough.
Like, after this week, like, could you, because that's the whole point. Because AJ told us the whole time, this is going to be a tandem, this is going to be a tandem, this is going to be a tandem. It's like, yeah, all right, yeah, cool, yeah, whatever. And it's like, I don't know, who's the better, and in a fun way, who's the better catcher? Because Jake had a home run, he should have thrown a dude out today had it not been for, I would say, a less than ideal tag on the stolen base. And Carson Kelly was the hero in multiple ways on Saturday. So, like, true tandem, sometimes that can be like BS. Like, let's be honest, like that can be BS. This was also a weekend of like, I don't know, who's your catcher? I don't know who your catcher is. Like, because Carson Kelly deserves his flowers, man, because he came up big in multiple spots, and so did Jake. So the catching situation, I think we thought a strength coming into the year. But, you know, we're only talking about 3 games here. But looks like a legit strength.
Yeah, I mean, you need both these guys to keep hitting, but you have to feel really good about it right now. And I asked AJ actually before the game, when you have two catchers, they're both right-handed hitters. You've said you think it's important for both catchers to catch everybody. How do you decide who plays on any given day? Is there a process to it? And maybe there is. I still know that it's an absolute science. You know, he said he's mapped out the first couple of series. One reason he wanted Kelly to pitch Maeda, or to catch Kenta Maeda, because he caught him a little more in spring. But and so that leads me to this. If I had to rank the power rankings, then we'll do this like tongue in cheek throughout the season. Why not? I'm going Jake in person too, because both had really good weekends. Kind of the difference. Kenta Maeda got in some trouble, and Carson Kelly wasn't really able to get him out of it. Now, I don't know how much of that is on the catcher, because Kenta didn't have the fastball, and he didn't have the split, and he didn't have the slider. So maybe you can sequence a little differently, but there's only so much you can do. Jake Rogers, however, helped Jack Flaherty make a huge mid-game
What did he get him, like
adjustment.
three strikeouts? You know,
The
like.
minimum. Well, yeah, that the framing was amazing, and just the pitch calling. Flaherty, I was felt pretty lukewarm about his fastball. He got away with some mistakes, and then Corey Lee hit one for a homer. I just thought his fastball command was meh at best. And kind of right after that Lee homer, you started seeing way more of this, man. Flaherty really pumped in that slider, and next thing you know, you look out, he's got six strong innings. Some really good mid-game adjustment from Jake Rogers and the Tigers.
So Flaherty, and we'll get to Maeda in a second. Flaherty, like, to me, was like the quintessential, like, if you're a box score Bob, I'm not really sure you got the full scope of Flaherty. Like, obviously his box score was good. It was good. But it kind of, you didn't necessarily feel all that comfortable, like, in the
The first three
moments.
innings, I thought weren't comfortable. I do worry, like against a bigger, a better lineup. Yeah, I don't know how that's going to go.
No, for sure.
No, hopefully
And
he has better stuff next time. He didn't have
yeah.
quite the sizzle on his stuff that he had all spring.
And look, credit to him for managing it. The slider was working. I mean, even sometimes he had a strikeout to end an inning that was like middle fastball at 95 that I just, you know, I'm not really certain that I'm comfortable with that pitch in general, you know, against major league hitting. But look, credit to the result. Credit to the result. It was good. The result, so that's one free agent signing on this rotation. The one that was lacking was Kenta Maeda, and what I wrote in my notes was, I don't know. Obviously, I know he has the interpreter, and I don't know Japanese at all. But I was curious whether there was like whether the F word translated to any language, because he would give up a home run to Luis Robert Jr. And, you know, hands on the knees, and it looked like he just said the F word. I don't know, like, and exclaim. Like, I don't know if that tra if there's a Japanese version of that, but it just seemed like it was just like F. You know, is there a
Mean, it's
Jap
entirely possible. I
is
mean,
this
here's one thing I learned. The first words guys learn in each other's languages, so both English players learning Spanish or Japanese and
is
Japanese
curse
players learning
words?
English, it's the curse words, all right? So I'm sure Kenta Maeda, he knows a little bit. He's been around. He knows some English. I'm sure he is well-versed in English cursing.
Well, what he was not well versed on Saturday is breaking pitches that actually broke. You know, if I sometimes I think like, how do I describe this? Like, you know, I'm watching this, you know, pitch by pitch and listening to it. And it's like, how do I describe this to like my father or my wife? And then like I would describe it as like, well, he threw breaking pitches that didn't break. Is that as simple as it was for him? It just seemed like he just didn't have it, which led to a question on Twitter, which look, I don't think weather was crazy in Chicago, but it is worth asking, like, if you're relying on the breaking ball as opposed to the fastball, and you know, whatever sort of break that you throw, I don't know if you even know the answer to this, Cody, but like, is having like a cooler climate in general, because obviously it wasn't freezing, but a cooler climate in general, does that make it harder, like, to get that break, to have that grip, to get that
Yeah,
velocity? Is that a thing? I don't know. I don't
I'm not enough of a physicist or meteorologist to be able to
know.
give a definitive answer there. I would lean toward no. You hear players talk a lot about elevation affecting their breaking stuff. So if you're going and throwing in Colorado or even Arizona, the ball might move differently than it does elsewhere. Shelby Miller, who played in the NL West last year, talked about that with his splitter. And I think grips have a lot to do with it. It's hard to grip the ball. Old mother. Now, Saturday in Chicago, I don't know exactly what the temperature got to. It was actually a pretty nice day. I don't think it was so cold that he really should have been having major grip issues. So I don't know exactly what the culprit for Maeda's lack of feel for secondary pitches was. I know all of that was kind of heightened by the lack of life on his fastball. One of the reasons the Tigers signed Maeda, they took note of the velocity increases he had down the stretch last season, was back more to his pre-Tommy John surgery velo. Fastball averaged 91 last year and came out, I believe it was 88.9, somewhere in that range on Saturday. Bobby Scales was explaining it really well. You can get by with 91 when you have the slider, when you have the split, but you can't really get by with 88, and you definitely can't get by with 88 if you don't have the other stuff, and you don't have your fastball to carry you. Kinemite is the type of guy basically needs to pitch backwards. If you don't have that, you're relying more on the fastball, and your fastball is 88, you're in big time trouble. Of course, tons of people on Twitter, why is Maeda a Tiger wanting to cut
Right,
Kinemaeda?
right.
Ridiculous call, guy. He's on a 2-year guaranteed deal, so you can't send him down, and you're not getting rid of him. And also, it's one start. This is a proven guy who's had success in the major leagues. Historically slow starter, ERA, I think close to 5 in March and April in his career. So whether I have something to do with that, I don't know. Just is that psychology? I don't know. Let's give this guy a few more starts before we make any sort of real judgments. I will say the velocity is something I'm going to be keeping an eye on because you do need to tick up higher than 88 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one of those things. Like, keep in mind, but also realize the grander scope here. And he did not take Matt Manning's place in the rotation. So, like I understand,
It's,
like the.
isn't that weird? Like, sometimes the best thing that can happen to a player in terms of public perception is getting sent to AAA. I really love you if you're the next guy. I said that a few times. The backup quarterback syndrome. Such a real thing.
I mean, I respect Matt Manning stuff. If I told you he did that on Saturday, would anybody be shocked? Would anybody be
No.
shocked? You know what I mean?
No.
And give the Tigers bullpen credit. Actually, let's do this right now, Cody. I think you need a victory lap because I don't know, like, you're not a slam dunk dude on Twitter, X, formerly known as Twitter. Like, you play it pretty straight. You're obviously not doing anything outlandish, but some people were like, what Will Vest, like, why is he just kind of given the spot here, and you explained it out with the stats last season. And if you had any questions about that coming in, those were answered on Saturday. Like, Will Vest, again, we'll still get to Lang, but Will Vest came into like literally the worst situation you can, and he managed with some help to get out of it, and he continued on from there. I would almost say a forgotten guy from the bowl because we didn't talk about him. Did we mention him maybe twice in spring
Not a
training?
lot, not a
Maybe like,
lot.
oh yeah, Will Vest, whatever. But
Yeah, well,
there's a guy that has a role here. He has a role here, and so here's a victory lap for you.
I want to be real. I'm gonna be a little more of a slam dunk type of guy this year because Twitter, man, has gotten out of hand. So if you say something that's just really stupid, like Tigers need a DFA Kenta Maeda, or like Andrew Chafin should be pitching in the KBO minor leagues, or Will Vest shouldn't be trying to have a roster spot. I'm going to start calling these things out, honestly, because I'm tired of them. So Will Vest, yeah, really rough spring. He was guaranteed a roster spot because he had a 2.98 ERA and plus 10 Ks per nine last year in the big leagues. He's had success in the major leagues. It'll probably be the last time on this podcast all year we reference spring training stats. Now that we're into the regular season, guess what? None of it matters. We spent a month, 6 weeks talking about it. None of it matters at all. Will Vest comes out, the lights are on, big situation. Pitches really well. Is anyone worried about what he did against the Phillies in spring training anymore? No.
No, but I will say that I was concerned last year. So, like, look, I don't do a lot of like patting myself on the back. That's not really who I am. But what do we talk about Thursday night? I was like, I had zero inclination that Lang was going to come into the game there in the ninth. Zero, zero. Like, never even crossed my mind. Maybe I should have been thinking of all the scenarios. I wasn't. I was like, this is Foley. This is Foley all the way. Lane gets his shot on Saturday, and he can't find the strike zone. He just, like, what did he throw at 1.7 strike curveballs? And
something like that.
Like, I don't know, like two of them for strikes. And the ones that he, like, the one out he did get was, you know, kind of a gift, you know, because it wasn't any different location wise than any of the other off speeds. Like, I'm not going to try to kill the guy here. But that was why. That was why. I don't have, as much as I like his profile, which I do, I don't have right now the confidence in him to consistently find the strike zone in a, I'll say, clutch situation, in a crucial situation. And that bore itself out there. Like, I was watching it, and I was, like, keeling over, like, after every ball. I was like, ugh! 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 And it's, like, it's supposed to be cold there, and you have the half turtleneck. Maybe the whole turtleneck would have worked, you know what I mean? But it was just, it did not inspire any confidence. And to me, like, he's lower tier. Like, somebody texted me about it. I was like, look, I'm not giving up on this profile. Like, almost, I almost kind of feel the same way that I do about Joey Wentz, who we did not see this week. But I was in favor of keeping on the roster. I was like, I'm not giving up on his profile, but I'm also, like, not tiering him anywhere higher than he needs to be, which, as of now, is in a lower tier. And I did, like, there's a couple examples, and one of them we'll get to here in a second. There's a couple examples I thought of the Tigers being like, all right, we won two games. Let's be able to, let's kind of treat this as a situation where if we lose, it's obviously not the end of the season. We won two out of three, right? You see that all the time. And I think AJ, I mean, basically said it, wanted to get Lang in this game to give him some good mojo moving forward. It didn't, you know, work itself out that way, but that kind of tells you, it kind of tells you what you need to know. Who came in to close it out again?
Foley, yeah. Foley. And James has asked before the game, like, does the next appearance for Lang need to be lower leverage? And he was like, no, you know, you're going to see him today. Well, there's another close game with some high leverage situations. I'm not sure there was, like, a perfect pocket for Lang, so you need to let him to navigate some lefties. And then, again, you're going to put Lang in the ninth with the game on the line. But it is telling. Like, AJ said this, and then Lang, once the game's close, Lang did not appear in the game. So I don't want to overreact to one performance, but it has been an ongoing issue. Obviously, the strike throwing with Lang is huge, and it's everything. It makes you wonder, because every now and then he comes out and he's really good, and sometimes he's not. So how much of that is strictly mental?
Again, I want to reiterate, I'm not giving up on the profile of Lang. I overall like that profile being in your bullpen. But I'm also going to say, like, look, dude, if your manager says, yeah, we're going to put him in and we just need him to throw strikes, I'm not going to look at that as, like, you know, the most glaring endorsement of all time. Like, you know, your job, Cody, like, as a writer, it's like, yeah, you know, we like, you know, overall his writing's good, but we just want him to, we just need him to put periods at the end of every sentence. It'd be like, well, okay, well, we got some concerns now overall about his consistency. You know, like, we like a lot of stuff, but we got to get this. I just want him to throw strikes. I was like, me too. Me too. You know? And that's not me saying, like, he should be cut, you know, whatever. Like, I believe in him as a principal, but I also think, like, today would have been that shot to put him in there, in the sense that you already got two out of three. That's what I thought. That's what I was kind of getting at. I was like, you already got two out of three. Like, if this is the game to try to get somebody in those lever situations, and obviously I'm not going to criticize anyone for bringing in Foley, because I was actually explaining to my father, because the ninth inning happened when I was at my parents' house, you know, for Easter dinner. And he's like, so is that the closer? And I was like, we don't use the C word around here, Dad. You know, I was like, you know, it's like, it's you know, I kind of explained to him, it was like, AJ basically wants everybody to think they're the closer so that they're ready in that kind of situation. And then I was like, but in reality, look at this 99 mile an hour sinker. That's the guy who's getting out right now, you know, in reference to Foley, which he did. So, okay, so just to reiterate something that you've said and something that I've mentioned, Cody, I think in terms of how the Tigers played this game specifically, they played it aggressive. Like, you know, let's try to get a win, but if we don't, I think that was the mindset. That's, again, literally what we said, you know, a couple minutes ago about Lang. But at the same time, there are some drawbacks, and that's okay. It's 162 games. You know what I mean? I think that was kind of part of the scope. Like, at the end of the year, a sweep in March against the White Sox is maybe not as meaningful as player X doing X. You know what I mean? So I think that that's all part of the calculation from the brass. I think that they think about things in that scope.
Well, they did. Quick anecdote. I was actually rereading Moneyball, which is an interesting thing to do 20 years after the fact. Talked about Billy Bean. You know, he would get emotional. He would rage during games, tear up the weight room, and Paul DePodesta, you know, if they lost, would just be like, "We know we're going to lose at least 60 times this year. This is one of them," and just not care about it.
I'll do a second anecdote of that. One of the guys that I think is at the apex of the podcast industry is Ryan Russillo, and he used to do, you know, local Boston radio, and one of the reasons why it wasn't the best fit for him is he'd go on post game for Red Sox games, and you know, his co-host would be like outraged about this like decision to bring so and so out of the pen, and Russillo would be like, "Well, I mean, you know, there's 162 games, and, you know, not every decision is going to be perfect and work out, you know." And you know, that's actually also kind of how I view things, which leads me to today. Like, I think we've kind of been used to some aggressive calls on the base path. And even in spring training, you and I gave different opinions about what was, like, the best thing to do in terms of should you be aggressive or should you, you know, be, you know, a little bit protective of your players. And
you were right on that, by the way, Kieran. I don't think I ever told you that was a calculated thing. Like, we're just going to send everybody.
Okay. Yeah, well, now I feel a little bit better about myself. But on that line, I think that kind of applied today with, what was it, Mark Canha coming around third and a situation, as it played out, it just, not a great call. And I think, what did you say? It was like, this is AL Central baseball.
No, Pete, we're back. You know, the AL Central is back, baby. Inning should have been over. Error, you know, shortstop throws the ball into right field. For some reason, Mark Canha runs home. He shouldn't have. But Joey Cora, I went and watched the replay from like the high home angle. Joey Cora, the minute that ball in the outfield, he is just windmilling that arm. Didn't seem to care when Dominic Fletcher picked up in right field. Didn't seem to care to read or who the runner was or who was even going to get the ball. Like, he was just sending the guy. So it was a little bit of a spring training mentality there. I try not to fault people for being aggressive, but it was
okay,
a really bad
scene. So let's talk about that for a second, because I think there's actually kind of two elements here for that. Let's just go with the premise that it's a bad send. It's a bad send. Okay. Why is it a bad, like, so why make that decision? I think, again, there's two elements here. You've won the series, and you might as well kind of go for it. Like, I think that's a fair mentality to have. We could disagree with it, but I think that's a fair mentality to have. Might as well go for it, put the pressure on the defense. These things probably tend over time to work out in your favor. Let's do it. Send them aggressively. I have no problem with that. The second prong of this is I think there are some Tigers fans that are not too keen with Javier Baez. I think that's fair to say.
Oh, wow. Hey, never considered
that. And so I think some of them probably assume that he has, like the organization is blind to it, you know, in some fashion.
They're not. They're not. I promise you they're not.
But here's an example of them not being, you know, not being oblivious to it. I think there's a realm of possibility that if Carpenter, Green, Torkelson, you know, Carson Kelly on Saturday, right? I'll lump him in the category because he deserved it. I'm not, maybe you don't send him when that guy's on deck. But who was on deck in that moment? Javier Baez. And to Javi's credit, he led off the next inning with a single.
I was gonna say that's why I wouldn't be a fan of holding a guy at third based on or sending a guy at third based on who's on deck, because you don't know. There are a lot of random outcomes in this game. Javi, again, yeah, he came up and hit a single in the fifth inning. So now, oh, you wish you had that single when runners were on base. I took the Jim Leland approach. Leland was a third base coach for Tony La Russa's White Sox way back in the day. As a third base coach, you should only consider one thing. Is he going to score or is he not going to score? All right, like the outs, who's up, like that kind of matters, but ultimately it doesn't matter. Is he going to make it or not? Joey Quirk was clearly trying to be aggressive there. And wanted to make them make a perfect play. I asked AJ about it after the game. Like, why do you think he sent him? And he kind of gave, like, well, we knew Fletcher was going to have to backhand it to corral the ball and then make a play and then make the tag. And maybe that factored in a little bit, but still, like, Cannon was out by a mile, dude. So I'm sure he was more just trying to, you know, not throw his coach under the bus.
Well, look. Yeah,
that's kind of all I can say.
Bottom line is, like, an underrated thing is the third base coach, those split second decisions.
Oh, it's a top job. Like,
it's not me having like flowers for Cora or any of those guys. I'm just saying, like, those are tough calls. Those are tough calls that a manager doesn't have to make that many decisions, quote unquote, in the moment, like during live action. He makes zero, right? You know what I mean? Like the base coach actually does. So, you know, for whatever that's worth, I just think it's a good reminder of that stuff. And again, like, I'm just gonna, as of right now, I'm not gonna like harp on caution or I'm not gonna harp on aggressiveness.
Yeah. And for the record, I had no problem with the play where Kerry Carpenter got thrown out at third Saturday. That was maybe a hint of an aggressive stint, but I think it really took a perfect throw from Dominic Fletcher.
That was a different thing, because it was not a bad send in any fashion, because you're just typically not getting a right fielder throwing third there. Saturday was a weird base running day, because, like, I know Canna advanced those bases, but, like, did he look natural in any of them?
No, I didn't think we'd see Mark Canna stealing third. That's one thing I was not keeping an eye out for.
It didn't slide all that great in the second or third in that inning. I was like, And then the Carpenter thing where it's like, look, if you wanted to try to grab third base from the left field line, you should just take a wider route, bro, because you kind of missed it there. Nitty gritty stuff aside, like, I'm okay with the aggressiveness there. It was fine. And, you know, Carpenter had himself also a nice weekend, so I don't want to say, like, oh, he sucked slide in the third, but he had himself a nice weekend, because that, again, applies to what I said was more or less the perfect weekend. But that also brings me to this, Cody. We got ourselves a nice little race for HKG. We haven't updated in a while. Nothing was kind of real happened.
Ooh, Harris kind of died.
I mean, Carson Kelly, two clutch hits, including the game winner, on Saturday's game. McKinstry with some, you know, we can't forget about him, right? Like, with some clutch plays at third, which, again, not his most natural position, but he can play it, as we saw. Mark Canna was amazing on Saturday. Amazing. And, you know, like, he essentially proved himself as, like, okay, this is why they brought him this type of guy, like, over the weekend. And Ibanez, the perfect pinch hitter, like, I almost feel, like, bad even, like, giving, like, credit to him slash AJ for the pinch hit, game-winning hit, because it's, like, the way they talked about him was, like, he's this, like, staunch starter, but they applied it perfectly to where, like, his impact was as such as he was starting, just like, all right, come in, base hit, RBI, game winner, you know what I mean? Obviously, we know he can play defense, and yeah, so, like, basically, those guys, I was like, you know, HKG, I don't, you know, after Saturday, I thought there was going to be a clear pecking order. I don't know if I have a clear catcher, I don't know if I have a clear pecking order for HKG.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you know things went well this weekend, when you've got kind of a, you know, these guys the organization is kind of depending on. You know,
and Gio was,
we're not talking
Gio
about
played
Wiley or Torque or some of these other guys. We're talking about the win on the margins types of dudes, and they almost all had really good weekends. That leads me to another question. I put this on my story. Are we going to start calling this Hinge Ooh. Ball, Harris Ball,
HH?
Some kind of term? I'm not sure.
HH Ooh. Ball? Can we do that? Can we start that now?
HH
Double
Ball.
H? Double H?
Maybe. I'm open to it.
Okay.
I think we got to workshop it a little more, but we got to.
I like that. Kind of I like that. I think that's 100%. I think that's 100% valid. And again, should things go well this season, it's going to be a lot of Double H, HH, you know, we'll workshop it. You know, kind of ball, because that's 100% what this weekend was. Like, if they would have won two games, if they would have lost,
really,
let's just say they lost two games by one run, I think the general notion of HH ball would have applied here. So, I think that's valid. I think that's something that, you know, hey, look, at Cody Stavenhagen, at Kieran _ Steckley, at Turn Corner Pod. Like, if you got an idea, we'll hear it. All right, let's go to the thing that made national headlines for Detroit this weekend. We gotta talk about the pizzas. We gotta talk about the pizza sphere. So I'm gonna lay it out this way. I'm not anti the pizza sphere, because I personally think one of the, in terms of national chain pizza, like, advertisements, I think the pizza is, like, it stood the test of time. It's been there for years. They haven't felt the need to change it. Whereas every other, like, you have Domino's, who literally made an ad campaign about how their pizza used to suck, and it's like, oh, it doesn't suck anymore, you know, and, you know, Papa John's, I don't really need to elaborate on that, you know, and Pizza Hut has gone in, has, like, had to change their whole sort of MO over the years, whereas the whole pizza has stood the test of time. So I appreciate that.
I wanted to be known real quick. I'm not really a pizza snob, but I had Domino's in Lakeland, and I thought it was really bad. It was like, it just sorely disappointed me. So regardless of my take on the pizza sphere, Tigers PR, just know, I'm not going to be going back to Domino's anytime soon.
And on a general note, Little Caesars, Little Pizza Puffs have gotten, like, X loves those.
All right. We're not doing any more ads for Little Caesar. They got plenty with the pizza.
If they
want
to advertise with us, they can, and we'll get to that a little bit later.
Well,
I'm just saying, X loves them. More, you know, that's in general. That has been a big win for them. So credit is due. I have a couple thoughts on the pizza sphere as a home run celebration. Number one, it does seem rather sharp. I haven't seen it in person. I don't know if you have, Cody, but
I
see it, I'm like, somebody else, I think it was Lynn Henning, like, put it on X, and he is right. Whereas, like, you know, it's classic, like, oh yeah, it'll be fine, and you're gonna poke your eye out, you know, type deal or whatever, because it does look sharp. It looks like a real sphere. I don't know if it is, but it looks like a real sphere. But
I doubt it. It seems very hazardous.
I'm just saying that's what it looks like, and I have so Tigers PR here we go, got this out. Tigers PR. Dr. Mrs. Turn the Corner has a suggestion. So the sphere needs to start out with like maybe 1, 2, maximum of 3 pizzas on it. And then for every home run you hit in that game, another pizza gets added on. So like, you know,
I like that.
It would have been 2 pizzas added on each of the past 2 games, right? So like that, I think that's a great idea. So I gotta credit my wife there. She's like, they should add pizzas for every home run. Like that should be part of it. Is that you get to add the pizza onto the sphere. I think that, because think about it, how is that any different than like shooting a Gatorade cup when you have the stick and the helmet for the Red Wings thing? It's like it's still an action that you do. Whereas as of now, it's just you kind of hoist it, which is fine. But you can like add a pizza to it.
Yeah, and the lack of action has been kind of part of the feedback. Mark Cannon said, I didn't know what to do with the stick. Riley Green said something pretty similar. It's like, you get the stick, and then what? Cool. But yeah, after the pizza sphere made its debut, I asked Spencer Torkelson about it. For the record, this was a player-driven celebration. According to the Tigers, it was not drawn up in a marketing meeting, even though it sure seems like it was. It's Spencer Torkelson's idea.
Shout out Tork.
And Tork goes, yeah, did you like it? And I was like, oh, now I'm the one being asked questions. I'm on the spot. And I was like, I haven't decided how I feel about it yet. And I'm going to stick to that. I'm not going to hate it. If it was the player's idea and they like it, cool. It does kind of like, at least it's fitting to the organization in a way. I don't love anything that feels like an ad, really. But where I think we lost some credibility is when both Spencer Torkelson and Mark Canha said, and by the way, Little Caesars has great pizza. Like now we're doing an ad. Now we're jumping the shark in terms of being corporate. Mark Canha, noted foodie. Little Caesars has great pizza. Someone said this, even the people who love Little Caesars aren't necessarily claiming it's great pizza. The whole thing is like, well, yeah, it's cheap and market, it's fine. But, you know, it's pretty good. Like that's just the reality. That's what they're not geared toward.
Okay, so two suggestions. Number one, the easiest thing to do is to take my wife's suggestion. And honestly, Tigers, please do this.
Well, but I'm told they are working to make the pizzas less floppy. Someone who's been assigned to that. There's a staff member whose job right now is to make the pizzas less floppy.
That's fine. You can
floppy.
Do that with the bases. And then when a guy hits a home run, you hand him a slice and you put it on the sphere. That one can be floppy. That's fine because it's going to be beneath the more stiff pizzas.
I like that. I think that would make it a lot. Would that not be great?
Yeah, it's like Torque hits a bomb. Like, seriously, take this.
Maybe we'll get Spencer on.
Someone hands him a pizza and he's like, ha! You know? And I think that, and then he gets to hoist the spear. Like, I think that'd be great. This is literally my wife. Like, she's like, that they should do that. And, like, she's way smarter than me. So, of course, that she thought of this. You know what I mean? So, like, 100% do this. And on, you know, a different level, like, you could also make them square. You could make them square or rectangular or whatever. You know what I mean? There's nothing.
Very Detroit. Spread the Detroit pizza.
Yeah, there's
gospel.
Nothing preventing you from doing that. You know what I mean? Little Caesars has Detroit style pizza. So, like, yeah, like that. That is 100% like in the realm. So that would be my two suggestions. Number one, you have your sturdy base, and the guy who hits a home run puts it on, and have him some squares.
All right. Well, I think we've talked for way too long about the pizza sphere. I know you, Cody.
I know that you'd rather talk about pizza than hockey. So I think this...
Not wrong. I actually like it more than the hockey celebration.
All right. I do want to take some time as right now, Cody, we're at the end of this podcast. We talked about two and a half games, even though we talked about the first one. I did want to, like, a little bit of a rehash of, you know, like, why we do this. This is our fourth year doing this, and, you know, some people come on at different times and all that stuff. And so I wanted to kind of explain us a little bit, and I'll speak for myself, and then you can do so for you, Cody. Cody and I went to college together. I've known Cody since literally his first day at Oklahoma State University. We have worked together in some capacity more or less since we've been adults, whether it be working together at the college newspaper, whether it be I had a radio show in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and he was a guest spot. And when he went to the Athletic and then he started covering the Tigers, we would just talk on the phone about the Tigers. And basically what you hear on this podcast is what those phone conversations were like, just with a little bit of cleaner language. Like, this is more or less like verbatim as we would talk. And my Tigers fandom is a result of my father, who grew up in Franklin, Michigan. He's a Michigan State graduate. He was Al Kaline's paper boy, so, like, you know, Little League and all that stuff. I always wore number 6. There is nobody in higher acclaim for my father than Mr. Kaline. And so, like, when Cody was covering the Tigers, there was another podcast that a colleague of him had that was sort of the fan journalist element. That was the Bun and Cardigan Show with James Edwards and Nicholas.
R.I.P.
It no longer exists, but that was like the... I was like,
pour,
well,
one out for the Bun and Cardigan Show.
If I was like, if they can do it, then we can do it. And so I asked him. He was like, yeah, let's do it. And we just do this all on our own. It's not officially a part of the Athletic. It's not officially a part of anything other than us. And like I said, this is the fourth year. Like, there's been, you know, some major things have happened in my life, you know, as we've been doing this podcast. I've went from fiance to a husband. Cody was the best man at our wedding. And, like, I've had to bury my grandfather. My father had a severe accident in which he was in a coma for about a month. That was last year. He lost his leg. He's all good now. I just was hanging out with him here on Easter. He's mowing lawns now. So if anybody's like, oh, how's he doing? He's mowing lawns and he's installing installing TVs and all that stuff in spare rooms. So yeah, he's being classic him. And there's a lot of Tigers podcasts out there. And they all have their place and they're all good. They all provide value. Like, this, I don't have anything bad to say about any of them. But I can tell you that no other podcast has the chemistry, the natural chemistry, because I've been best friends with this man for more than a decade, and I love him, than what we have here. And I hope that plays out. We try to have fun here. We try to be, you know, we try to be serious, but never take ourselves too serious. And I hope that comes across. So as the season begins, I kind of wanted to give a little bit of a rehash of why we do what we do. Because, you know, Cody, you do this professionally. I do it because I love it, and you love it too. But, like, this is not work for me. This is so much fun. I look forward to it every week, and even more as we plan out this season.
Well, that's really well said, Kieran, and touching and heartfelt as well. Love you too, my man. We recap some of that in part because we've also got some announcements. We've kind of hinted at this for a while, but Kieran puts a ton of work into this. You know, I take some time out of my schedule, but Kieran does the editing, does all this himself, been doing it pro bono for a few years. We want to kind of up the game with Turning the Corner. We would love to have a little bit of financial support to help make that happen, to help provide you guys more and better content. So we've been working on some things, and I think we're ready to throw it all out into the world. Number one, Talked about the merch store. The merch store is up. All right. If you want one of the vaunted turning the corner koozies that were just hits last year when Kieran handed them out on opening day, those are available. You want a t-shirt? You want a hoodie? You want a mug? Those are available. You can find that link in our X bio. We will continue to be teasing it. Appreciate it. And you got to have a koozie, right? Furthermore, this podcast, loyal listeners, we're looking for some advertisers. So I don't, and it's our first time doing it. It's going to be a little bit of trial and error, but if you own or work for a local business and be interested in an ad spot on Turning the Corner, consider this a call out. Hit up Kieran or I, and we can talk a little more business. We're also, we've got a tip jar on Venmo. That's TTC-pod. If you're able to donate any sort of contribution just to help keep this thing going and help us improve it, that would be greatly appreciated. We're more audio content, more video content, branching into perhaps the realms of Instagram and TikTok, looking to bring on some guests, some of your Detroit Tigers and personalities around the Tigers. We're going to get that going as well. So I'm excited to share this news. Did I miss anything, Kieran?
No, I think you nailed it. And what we'll do is we'll end this episode, so it won't just be me saying like have a great week, which I hope everybody has a great week. You can follow Cody on X at Cody's David Hagen. I'm at Kieran underscore Stegley. Pod page at Turn Corner Pod. Instagram, Turn Corner Pod. YouTube, Turn the Corner Podcast. All those plugs. But we're gonna try to do this once a week. It may not happen, but we're gonna try to do this about once a week where we just kind of have a Tigers player or maybe, you know, personnel if the situation dictates it. Just kind of explain something that happened in the week. And this week, in an inaugural sense, it was Parker Meadows describing his, what I would just say is a spectacular catch in left center field and the epitome as to why this man is A, the most fluid ball player on the team, and B, not even low key, like high key, like importance and excitement in terms of where this team can go. He obviously had some stuff with the bat this weekend as well, but we're gonna end this episode with Parker Meadows describing robbing a home run. How fun is that, Cody?
I like it.
So I hope you guys enjoy. I want to thank everybody for listening and following us on all the social media platforms as well as on the podcast platforms. And we appreciate all the kind words and all the support that we get, you know, financial or not. We appreciate all the support. So for Cody Stavenhagen, I'm Kieran Stackley. Everybody here is Parker Meadows.
All right, we're here inside the Tigers clubhouse with Parker Meadows. Parker, there were a lot of great moments in Saturday's game. Your catch on Martin Maldonado's ball was one of them. Take us through how that play unfolded for you.
Yeah, I knew the wind was blowing out a little bit. You know, once it was hit off the bat, I knew I had to go get it. And luckily it stayed up and I was able to time it up right and made a good play on it.
The wind in Chicago is always a factor. You said yesterday the wind can seem a little different on the field versus a ball in the air. How do you kind of read that?
Yeah, I mean, I know the line drives hit at me are going to sink a little bit because on the field the wind's blowing in. And if they hit that ball up in the air, I know it's going to blow out but just by looking at the flags. Once it gets over that third deck, the wind's going to crush it. I knew we hit it high, so I knew it was going to carry, and we got it.
You seem to have really good presence, knowing where you are, knowing where the wall is. How challenging can that be for an outfielder, and how do you kind of find the wall?
Yeah, I think it's just taking BP serious, knowing the dimensions, and like I said, I mean, it really just comes down to BP and treating it like it's a game out there. So I take BP shagging very serious, and it paid off.
You said yesterday, not sure if it was out or not, but we can say it was a home run. Still what we're sticking with?
Yeah, we're sticking with that.
I like it. When you make the catch, you come down, what's your reaction?
I show some emotion. Usually don't do that. But, you know, knew it was a close game. And knew, you know, that catch kept us in it. So showed some emotion and kept us in the game. And
Pretty emotional game all the way through. What was it like to come away with the win when, you know, that final strike?
Yeah, I think that just shows what this team can do. You guys got a little taste of it, and you're going to see a lot more. We're never going to give up, no matter what's going on, both sides of the ball. And it was a great team win.